Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of April 17th. It's Sunday morning here in Japan, and with me is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
It's getting warm outside, so I'm happy. I'm very happy. I like the warm weather.
It has indeed. Yeah, we're now in this sort of nexus between it's like springtime and it feels good, but it's also still cedar pollen season, so we're thinking, go outside? Yes, no, maybe.
Well, in Japan, a lot of people like to wear those surgical masks.
Sure.
To try to protect themselves from all the pollen and stuff. And I refuse to do it, and I don't really even think it helps that much, but you won't see me wearing that stuff, and I'm going outside. I will not be deterred.
Well, I don't want to say what you are. You are or you ain't, but I resisted that for a long time, but it did help, you know, serious active resistance to the pollen allergy. But this year I haven't had one because I'm out of masks. Yeah. So anyway, no, it's good fun. It's good fun. I mean, the weather's looking good and the allergies, you know, in a week or two, the allergy will be gone. So there.
All right. Okay, on this week's show, we've got an interview with Dennis Sarfate of the SoftBank Hawks, and we're going to talk about the Hawks and a lot of surprises going around NPB, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so it was a real pleasure to sit down with Dennis Sarfate, the closer of the Hawks, on Saturday. This was April 8th, and he turned 36 the next day, so I got to tell him happy birthday, and that was nice. I was there basically for his birthday and was able to say that to him, and that was fun. And that was 6 days after he surpassed Mark Kroon's figure for the highest number of saves by a foreign pitcher. And, of course, we were going to talk about that sitting down, but he broke the record with ease, putting up a 1-2-3 inning against the Marines. He struck out the side, and he did his little bow that he does post-game. Yep. And I asked him about that, and he said Nobuhiro Matsuda suggested he do something after he closed out games. So he started doing it when he went to SoftBank. He hadn't done it in when he was with Hiroshima in 2011 and 12 or with Seibu in 2013. He started doing that in Fukuoka when he went there in 2014. So we talked at the home of the Seibu Lions at MetLife Dome, always forever in my heart endeared to as Seibu Dome. But yeah, it's MetLife Dome this year. for how long, we don't know, but let's take a listen to Dennis Sarfate.
All right, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Dennis Sarfate. Thank you very much for joining us again.
Thanks, John. Glad to be here.
And this is a special time for you, and we'll get to that in just a second, but how are you physically? I always ask you that because you're getting old. Your birthday is tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm getting old. I think I'm one of the oldest active players in the league, in our league at least, as full as bullpens, like me and Igarashi for sure are the oldest. But I feel good. You know, I put a lot of time and effort in the offseason, and it's a year-round job. It's not like we just stop playing when the season ends. I got to go home and start my training and my conditioning. And I got really into nutrition this offseason because my wife's a big nutrition nut, and I finally listened to her. And I started really getting into infrared sauna. We bought one for our house, and a lot of world-class athletes are using it. It actually penetrates through your it's not like a normal hot sauna. It actually penetrates through your muscles. And I did that for a lot of my conditioning off-season workout, and I feel great.
Awesome. And you look good. Now, last week on April 2nd, you closed out a game and you passed Mark Kroon for the highest number of saves by a foreign pitcher. Congratulations to you on that. And
I sent you
an email, and you know, it's out in the ethers right now. But
it's out somewhere.
What was that moment like for you?
It was cool because, you know, going into it, you always get the questions from the reporters. You know, you're going to pass Kroon soon. I said, well, hopefully. You know, never know. I can get hurt in my first game and be done. So once I got the first one out of the way, then the second one, I was like, man, I have a chance to do it, I guess, at home, which was really cool. And the great part is someone after the game told me that April 2nd is actually Mark Kroon's birthday. So I actually broke his record on his birthday.
Wow.
But, you know, it's an accomplishment. I respect what Kroon did here during his time in Japan. And anytime you hold a record, it's special. You know, that just shows you that there haven't been that many foreign players with longevity. And I take pride in that as far as how many games I pitch per year and how long I've been playing in Japan. You know, I thought I was a 1 year and done guy. And here I am in my seventh year. And after next year when my contract's up, I could be a Nihonjin and not count against the Gaijin anymore. So It's a real special time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What was your goal when you came over to Japan?
You know, my goal was just have fun. I thought I was at the end of my career, to be honest. You know, I had a good run in the big leagues. Then I got designated, I got hurt, and I didn't really know where I stood. We gave Hiroshima a chance, and then I got hurt my second year and kind of went home. And, you know, praise God that the Cebu Lions gave me an opportunity. And I did the best I could. And then, you know, the Hawks coming in and signing me. And I just feel like I got really better as a pitcher once I came to the Hawks and got challenged by, you know, guys like Toru catching me, challenging me to throw first pitch forkballs, first pitch curveballs, and thinking outside of the box and just always throwing my heater.
Right.
And I think that's what made me successful. You know, I think that's giving me my success so far.
So before coming to Japan, what would you have considered a successful career here?
Here in Japan?
Right.
What would have been successful?
Yeah.
I mean, 2 or 3 years and, you know, put up some decent numbers. I mean, I look back and I came over here with no expectations, not knowing what it was going to be like. And after my first year and 35 saves, you know, that the way that year started, I gave up 4 runs in my first 4 outings, I believe, with a card. And I was like, man, this is no joke. These guys are for real here. So, you know, and as I got used to the league, and now I respect a lot of these players, and they respect me. And when I come into the game, you can just see it's a cool battle. Like, everyone knows that I'm out there doing the best I can, and they're all trying to get me. And I see some of the swings that they take off me, and it's just a cool experience to be here 7 years now, and to still be the closer, to still have success, and to still be in good physical shape. So it's all a blessing. I mean, I don't deserve any of this, but it's been a good run.
Well, you know, hard work equals more work, so.
Yeah.
Now, you talked about it. Everyone knows you throw the heater, so how do you stay consistent while at the same time making adjustments?
You got to mix up your pitches. You can't just keep throwing heaters, especially like the Lions lineup, the Fighters lineup. You know, even the Eagles, you know, they got those little lefties that'll just foul you off to death. But, you know, you got to mix up. You got to throw your forkball. You got to be able to throw at least 3 pitches for a strike, because you can't. This isn't the league where you just get it behind 2-0 and throw a heater, because everyone knows it's coming. And you'll see guys throw 3-0 curveballs, 3-0 sliders, 2-0 curveballs. And that's where I've gotten to, where I'll throw a 3-2 forkball with guys on second and third. And most of the time they swing at it because they're sitting on the fastball. And, you know, you get to make different pitches. Now it's just cat and mouse game kind of.
But still, I mean, if you make adjustments, people adjust back to you. So, I mean, it's hard to stay consistent while you consistently make adjustments. So,
yeah,
how's that going?
I guess it's gone good. You know, I faced a lot of these guys a lot. So I'm used to, you know, it's that cat and mouse game. So they adjust to you, and you start seeing them maybe taking the first pitch. Then you throw a first pitch fastball, and then they take it, and they're like, now you get in their mindset. I rely a lot on my catchers. I don't ever shake off unless I really feel something like I need to throw this pitch in this situation.
Right.
I'll never shake. Toru, when he was here, I never shook him. We had a good rapport together, and I feel the same with Takaya. I mean, when I go out there, I feel the most comfortable with Takaya. Nothing against Suroka or Kai, but I just feel more comfortable with Takaya, and we have a good working thing together. I mean, 2 years ago, we lost to Ohtani and Ono as the good combination for the league for pitcher-catcher. So we were doing something right, and I feel like when I get beat or when I get hurt, he's not in the game.
Okay. All right, well, what do you focus on out there? You focus on the control, velocity, or is movement the biggest thing for you?
No, I don't think about any of that stuff. When I get on the mound, I tell myself 3 things. Stay back over the rubber, which tells me don't rush, don't get in a hurry to get home. Throw it right through the catcher, and 1 pitch at a time. Nothing can happen outside of 1 pitch at a time. Whether you give up, like yesterday, I gave up a leadoff single in a 2-run game, next hitter's Mejia. I'm 1 pitch away from getting
like last night.
Yeah. I'm 1 pitch away from getting a double play. I'm 1 pitch away from giving up a home run. So you can't think about, I got to get Mejia out the next night. It's 1 pitch at a time. And when I stay true to that, I have success. The other thing is staying back. I'm not rushing. My fastball gets better. I got more life on it. And throwing it through the catcher. I don't think about location. I don't think about throwing strikes. If I throw the ball, my visualization is when Takaya catches it, I want him to actually catch it and go through the umpire, through the backstop. So I'm thinking about driving it straight through him. And when I miss a little bit, I'm around him somewhere in his zone.
Right.
And now I have a bigger target. I'm not just aiming at the glove, I'm aiming at him. And I got power behind it so that it's heavier. And that's when I can blow it by guys.
Gotcha. All right, now I don't like to ask too much about the past in these interviews, but I think it warrants it in this case. You guys were up a bunch of games last year, and it didn't go well.
Yeah.
What happened down the stretch? Was it the combination of injuries and slump?
We stunk.
Or you can be blunt and say we stunk.
We got, Gita got hurt, but that didn't hurt us. We lost a lot of games in the seventh and eighth inning. We didn't hit at some time. I mean, I think we got shut out more times last year than we had maybe the previous 2 years that I was here. And we just, I think we took it for granted that we were the best team. And I mean, first of all, the Fighters won 15 games in a row. I think they lost the game, and then they won, I think, another 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
So when you do that, you're going to catch a team if you struggle. And we struggled right when they did that, and we blew an 11.5 game lead. We all knew it. We knew what was going on. And it's one of those things where, okay, I don't think that's going to happen again. I don't think we'll let it happen again. I kind of sat back last year as a foreigner and was going to let other guys do stuff to get us in the going. But this year, if I start seeing that happening, I'm going to have to step up. I mean, I've been here now. I have the respect of my teammates. I think they trust me. And my sole goal is to win, and especially for this team to win, because we have a great team. So I'm not going to let that happen again, and I don't think these guys will let it happen again either.
All right.
We kind of got kicked in the teeth, and we rebounded. We got some good players. We got Despaigne from the Marines, and really looking forward to playing with Kawasaki. I think he's going to be a positive for the clubhouse. And we're ready for this year. I think we're strong.
Well, you're getting out of order. We'll talk about Muninin in a second. But this organization does have a lot of talent, and we talk about it all the time. But who are some of the best young arms you think are in the organization we might see soon?
Well, Ishikawa's here right now. I think he's got a tremendous arm. He's got raw talent and ability. I like the first pick, Tanaka, from last year. I think he's got really good stuff. I think Matsumoto's got really good stuff. Higashihama has been a guy in spring training. I saw him throw a bullpen, and I said from that day, I said, this guy's starting to turn the corner. He always had good stuff, and he would go for 4 starts, and then he'd have a bad one, then he'd have one good, and then he'd have a couple bad ones, and he never got consistent. But now you're seeing the kid attack the zone with 3 pitches and not give in. So I think he's a guy to look at the end of the year, see where he's at. And there's a lot of other young guys, bullpen guys in the minor leagues that I'm not familiar with, but I see them throw, and I know we got a good team. But I would say the core team is here right now. Guys like Yuito Mori in the bullpen and Kayama, Shohei Iwasaki. So a lot of the good arms are here right now, but there are some that are waiting to come up.
Okay, yep, I know they are. All right, so yeah, you talked about Kawasaki coming back. Do you guys need more talent? Where's the place for him on this roster?
I think he brings something different. Obviously, these guys, I never play with him here, but just seeing how he translated in the big leagues with clubhouse atmosphere, I think we could use him, another type of Machi type guy. Just to hear how he plays and how hard he plays, I think he's going to be a positive asset for us. Where he plays, I have no idea, or what his role is, I have no idea. I think he's going to be kind of like maybe left field, third base sometimes, second base, whatever it may be. Injuries happen. You always got to have guys ready to come up and be ready to play. But I think he definitely brings a presence, a veteran presence, that we could use in leadership in the clubhouse as well as on the field.
All right, so last question. How many more years can we expect to see you firing balls out there?
Man, as long as God keeps me healthy. I mean, I don't really know how much more I can play besides, today. I could get hurt today. And so I try not to think about what's in store. I do have goals. I want to play 1 year as a non-foreigner. I think that would be a feat in itself. I think coming over here, not expecting to be here. I think of guys like, Jeff Williams and Kroon, mm-hmm. the guys that played over here. I don't know if they ever played as a non-foreigner. I know I played with Sikorsky and Sabu. I know he was. But to do it in 8 straight years, I think would be a pretty cool thing. That just shows you that I've stayed healthy. Longevity has been on my side. And, my contract ends next year, and then I'll be a free agent, and then that's the 8 years. So it'll be interesting to see, do I stay here with this team? Do I attempt to go back to the States? Do I retire? All that has been brought up. My wife and I talk about it. And as long as God keeps me healthy and he wants me to stay in Japan, then I'm going to stay in Japan. I don't have any urge to go back to the States right now, but that could always change.
All right. Well, listen to wifey.
Yeah, always got to listen to wifey.
All right, man. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thanks, Sean.
All right. So I've always liked Dennis from day one when he joined the Carp. And I recall you and I discussing him as a pitcher, and I was really high on him. And you were like, kind of lukewarm. And And look where he is now. He's the gold standard for import pitchers who come here and eye that target or end up in the closer role. He's got the most going on. So what did you like about the conversation?
Well, I like the conversation more than the comment about how I was lukewarm on him. But but I will definitely say John was bigger on Sarfati in his first year with Hiroshima than I was.
You do remember that?
Oh, sure I do. Sure, okay. I do. Sure. I was more like, you loved his whip, and I'm not a Devo guy, so I wasn't, whip is good, but it's not everything. So anyway, moving along to fast forwarding to 2017, and now he's got some gray hair going on there, and
some gristle, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. Dennis Gracious is his middle name, Sarfate. It was crazy. I just love this stuff. First of all, I think he could teach, it's like he could teach a university course on keeping things simple. I love that. ABC.
You think it would have to be a university course at that point then?
Well, it was the Jackson 5 thing, ABC, easiest 1, 2, 3.
Right.
It was like, okay, that was so cool. And so that was one thing that I really liked. Obviously, it's very complicated. And yesterday I was watching the Yankees-Cardinals game.
And right. Masahiro Tanaka made the start of the game. You were forced to watch. You were compelled to watch by work.
Well, I have an interest in how the guys do. And I would like to see how they do as opposed to just the results.
Right.
I was listening to the commentators talk, the Yankee broadcasters talking about not thinking, hitting and thinking are sort of not always the best friends. You think about hitting before you hit, Dennis is like, he's boiled it down. I love that thing, throw it through the catcher, and the way he explained it was very good. And he was pitching to us, he was going, okay, here it comes. Mm. This is going to knock you over. And it was really cool. The other thing I want to mention is I loved where he said, I finally listened to my wife. boy, yeah, that's the wife talking. That's the wife talking, saying you finally listened to her, this was very cool, because we don't normally acknowledge when we do listen. We always say we are. And the other question I have is, if you listen
don't
to your
put me
spouse
in that group, man.
And follow their instructions and you get the results they expect, are you still listening?
If a tree falls in the
or
woods.
Is it? Yeah, exactly. That one time.
Well, listen, buddy, don't put me in your group, man. I'm compelled to listen as well. But it seems like when you get into a higher tax bracket, there's a grace period where you don't have to listen to your wife.
I think it's
you make enough money.
No, I think that's only the first year. You get a first year exemption, and then only once. You have to declare it to the IRS.
Oh boy, but yeah.
Are we in trouble yet?
No, I'm not, because I don't think my wife listens to the show.
Well, that's all right. But I know there are some women who listen, so maybe not. Mm. But I don't think it's just men and women. I think it's spouses in general. It's yeah, honey, gotcha.
Yes. Well, I always listen to my wife. Mm-hmm.
Sure you do. We know that.
But yes,
I was listening to you, except that I was listening to my wife at the same time.
Right. I think the nutrition factor is obviously going to help him in staying healthy. And that's the only thing I've ever worried about him. I remember early on in his stint here in Japan, he had some back issues.
Mm.
And the other nagging injuries that he has gone through, I remember him. We discussed weightlifting and how much he lifts during the season, and we've talked about his regimen and those aspects before, but yeah, when you get into nutrition, that changes your body obviously from the inside. And for him to go through this time, because his time with SoftBank, he's been relatively, I would say, very healthy. I mean, I remember talking to him one time. In fact, we did an interview where he was fighting and scuffling with a nagging injury, but for the most part, he has been in good standing or in good health with that team.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic because, you know, he's done this, you know, he's sort of the definition of full circle. Because when he came to Japan, he said, you know, I was at the end of my career. And now he's thinking, how much longer can this go? You know, now he's going like, now I'm healthy and now I'm learning to do this. And it's like, man, life starts when you want it to start. I mean, it starts over the next day. He's got, you know, I love the bit about, you know, being challenged by this and being challenged by that. It seems to be sort of the central theme, being challenged, you know, finding new challenges that you want to be better than.
Yeah, I mean, how many times do we hear about guys coming here to have fun? That's what he said. I was just going to come here and have fun and finish my career. And that seems like something that guys used to say in the 70s and 80s to extend their careers here. And now it's more about establishing careers. We don't have guys coming here talking about having fun. We have guys coming here looking to, you know, establish a name here or put up some numbers and possibly go back to the States to play.
That's true, although I still think it's the majority. Well, I think that's, I think, you know, it's sort of a Venn diagram, you know, the circles that overlap, and you've got the group that is thinking, you know, this is sort of the end and I want to see where I'm at.
Right.
Another group is, I want to see, you know, the Matt Merton group, which is, I've never had 400 plate appearances at the top level, and I want to see what I can do with 400 plate appearances.
Right, and so that Venn diagram is shifting where you've got more guys. Yeah, exactly.
And then you get the guys who say, wow, people who play a long time, you know, and I think the small subset of that, because most of them, and I think to some degree, these are guys who have more experience playing around the world who say, well, you know, a career in Japan would be pretty cool. These are guys who've been in Mexico, you know, and a lot of time in winter ball with people looking to latch on to clubs and such.
Right. So the thing I liked in particular about this interview was the portion at the end when he talked about next year. So this all jibes with what you're saying. Return to the States being in the picture and possibly with another team, not SoftBank, and maybe in Japan, and him wanting to play as a player who doesn't count against the import player limit.
Yep.
And all those things were really... I had never even thought about that, you know, a return to the States, you know, and we saw Tony Barnett do it.
Well, he has been, I mean, scouts tell me, you know, he's basically always on their radar.
Sarfate is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't surprise me. I've been hearing these weird names sometimes pop out and I'm going, oh yeah. But I still remember being at a Fighters Lions game in 2006 in Sapporo Dome, and the Japanese media being surprised when the Boston Red Sox scouts said that they were there to scout Hideki Okajima. And they were going, no, you're pulling our leg.
Right. And so when he referenced that Toru Hosokawa, the veteran catcher who's now with the Eagles,
right,
talking about how he likes to, obviously, with Hosokawa gone, he prefers to throw to Hiroaki Takaya. And never shaking off the catchers. I didn't realize that he didn't shake off catchers. And that's so amazing because I remember talking to Mark Kroon before. And Mark Kroon told me that he had these fake shakes that he would shake off, especially when he was with the Giants. He would shake off Shinosuke Abe. And that was just a plan. Pre-planned shakeoff because he wanted to plant something in the batter's mind about what's coming next. That he never shook off Abe.
Okay, interesting.
And that he just wanted to make them think, well, you know, what's going on? And I remember after he told me that he said that there's a couple pitchers out there who shake off the catcher, but they don't have that many pitches. You know, they'll shake off two or three times, and he's like, well, they only throw a fastball or slider. What's he shaking to, you know?
Indeed.
So I like that cat and mouse thing. It's fun to watch. Dennis brought that up, that aspect up of the game. And, you know, I really like him, and he's such a fun guy, such a high-energy guy. You sit down to talk with him, and you come away energized because he just rubs off on you. And I don't, you know, I want to transition to talking about the Hawks and obviously, he mentioned the fact that they had that slide. I think the injuries, I mean, Yuki Yanagita getting injured was part of it. Other guys got injured. And the whole thing that I've been saying last year is they had injuries and slumps at the same time, and they weren't able to overcome it. But I also see, and I see it this year too, that Kimiyasu Kudo, the skipper, scuffling at times. And I saw it last year, and I'm seeing it right now because the Hawks are off to a bad start. I don't know if you looked at the standings in the Pacific League, but they're all flipped as everyone, a lot of our predictions were to have the same three teams that have been in the playoffs the past two, three seasons back there again. And that's the opposite of what we're seeing right now with the Eagles on top. And
Most of our predictions were the top two were going to be the top two. And then the third was most of us had picked the Eagles.
Most of us had picked the Eagles, but a lot of us, I don't know.
Most of us did, but a lot of us didn't.
But no, a lot of us, I don't think we had our hearts in it. I didn't pick the Eagles to do that well.
That's true enough.
Is what I was going to say. And, you know, Oryx, we almost all had them last. And granted, it's early. I don't like to look at the standings right now, but I do think that's interesting.
So what are we talking about, John?
What are we talking about here? What are we talking about?
Yeah, I don't like to look at them, but what have you been doing? How do you even know who's last?
I said I don't.
would you sneak up in the standings, close your eyes and then open them before it's too late for you to look away?
like I said, I don't like to look at the standings at this time, but I did find that interesting. You see the fighters at 4-10. Again, what I pay more attention to is how far under 500 a team is and how they're playing. I'm not really worried about the standings much.
I mean, I agree with you about that, but I'm just making fun of.
I know you are.
That expression, you gotta sneak up on the standings, so you're not actually looking at them.
Yeah,
like a little kid looking at his birthday cake when it's in the refrigerator.
Right. Don't ever pass up an opportunity to take out a bat and crack me in the head verbally.
Yeah, or just call me Juan. John.
Obi-Wan?
No.
But
Juan Marichal, John Roseborough.
Okay, stop. it just looks like a scrambling situation in Fukuoka now. And I actually see a couple teams scrambling. I see the fighters doing the same thing, bringing up young guys, giving them an opportunity to play, trying to change the momentum, change the flow. But to me, it seems a little bit different in Fukuoka. And I have to be honest, I've never really been all that impressed with Alfredo Despaña. He just isn't a consistent hitter. He has power, obviously, but he finally hit a home run yesterday, his first of the year on Saturday. And I don't know that he's going to live up to the expectations in Fukuoka. He was batting sixth on Friday, and I'd actually put him there permanently if I were Kuda. I wouldn't really put a lot of pressure on him. I'd let him, whenever he hits, guys are going to be on base. If he gets a hit, he'll knock them in. But they just look different from those past pennant-winning clubs that they built up. You know, Seiichi Uchikawa is hitting. The youngster Seiji Uebayashi I really like.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting hits, but he's learning his way out there in the outfield. He doesn't look sharp. So I think we're going to see Munenori Kawasaki sooner than later.
That's going to happen. And I think Dennis's comment that you know, he's going to be really useful is true. I mean, he was in many ways, you know, we need another Machi guy. He was the prototype Machi guy.
Mm.
he was the guy who, you know, Matsuda learned how to be caffeinated from, I think.
Mm. And you see, I mean, you with Dennis's energy with the pitching staff and Munadin energizing the position players. And I think, I mean, I asked him, where do you see him playing? I think he could play second every day.
I think so, too. Although he's playing left field in the farm team right now, so.
Right, but
I think that's more of they want to get him out there and, you know, see how he does.
And get him used to it and see where they can mix and match. And I think I think we're going to see him sooner than later. And I think they need something. They need a spark. They're not that far under 500, but they just haven't looked good. And the pitching staff has really been the big surprise for me. They, you know, throwing out Tadashi Setsu on Saturday.
Well, that wasn't a surprise. It wasn't a surprise, basically, because they're really struggling with injuries right now.
Yes,
the huge thing that, you know, the Fighters and the Hawks have in common is basically everybody's hurt. And I'm going to go back to last year, and because I you know, speaking of, this is all part of the same thing. I was reading a story. I was on the desk last night, and I had a story about Matsuzaka showed up at Yafuoku Dome yesterday, because that was the day he was supposed to start. And he said, well, sorry, I can't say anything. And it was a story about how he's still in, he's got a shoulder discomfort. And and he had originally been scheduled to start that Saturday game that Setsu started. And I tweeted, and I was didn't get any response from that one about how, you know, seeing Tadashi Setsu start a game in April for SoftBank was a sign of the Hawks eclipse.
Hashtag hi.
Yeah, I might have missed it or something. I don't know what happened that, but in April, yeah, he doesn't usually get his
well, he usually well, starts opening day. And then right. And then gets two or three starts. It used to be 2 months of starts, then it was 6 weeks of starts, then it was 3 weeks of starts to prove that he didn't belong there and had to go back to the farm. And when they brought him up, they didn't even start him on the first team this year, and they brought him up. And so I thought, oh my gosh, they're desperate. And so the story for Matsuzaka to move this along came out, and I wanted to find out about actually what Matsuzaka's situation was. So I called my buddy in Fukuoka, who basically spent all much of this year working on Matsuzaka's shoulder, and right. He said, "Oh yeah, Matsuzaka is really, really good this year." And I said, "Well, how do you mean?" He says, "Well, last year it was his back, and then it was his hip, and then it was his shoulder, and this year it's just his shoulder."
Oh,
so that's an improvement. So the other thing was that I asked about last year, and he said, "You know what?" Said the team was just exhausted in the second half last year. And that was his take on it. Although he was not with the first team last year. He's very into the numbers.
Into the numbers, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of their sort of like fitness record. You know, he always eyes that. And with the Hawks, the kind of interesting thing is they're all their team reports are online. And if you have the clearance to read a certain kind of report, you can see everything. And this guy is really clued into that.
Right.
So I think that was that was an interesting take. I think so they may have been more of a tiring rather than a apathy. But
right.
Yeah. But on the other hand, well, anyway, Dennis is kind of like a Navy SEAL though, you know, it's like tired. I'll show you tired. Just don't throw. But my shoulder's hanging by a thread.
Yeah, but my shoulder's hanging. Well, it just looks to me, and I mean, they just haven't been sharp. And it's a long season, and there are a lot of opportunities for guys to step up. And I think they will. They have too much talent.
That's a great expression. A lot of opportunities for guys to step up. And you know the Hawks with Uchikawa and Matsuda and Dennis and a couple of the other guys, and with Kawasaki, they've got, you know, they got that gait in their step, that they got that stride to step up.
Yep. And meanwhile, the Rakuten Eagles, like I said, I don't like to look at the standings, but I'm going to reference them because all the milestones I've seen them achieved so far early on after, what, we've got 11 games for them?
How can you have milestones in 11 games?
When you're a new franchise, relatively new franchise, and you don't win that much, and you start a season well, then everything is a milestone. And I think they had never been 8-2 through 10 games in a season, so that was a milestone. They won their ninth game yesterday on Saturday. Their winning percentage is 8-18 early on. I mean, these are little milestones. They're nice. Okay. It's nice for a team that hasn't done this ever.
They're like quarter milestones.
But they are not running on all cylinders, obviously. The trio of foreign players is not doing that well. Jafet
Amador
is not hitting. Zealous Wheeler, we think, will come around, but he hasn't been hitting. Carlos Peguero is doing really well in the middle of the lineup, and but it's the other guys. And I asked Dennis about this, and I said, "What's up with these Eagles? What do you think about them?" And he said, "Look, it's the little guys who are getting on base. The Egoro Mogis."
Well, it's the little guy, and I'll tell you the other thing. What is it about Motohiro Shima? You beat him up in the spring training, you hit him in the head with a bat. And this guy is like the Ever Ready Bunny this year,
the Energizer Cockroach. You can't kill him.
Hashtag high heat.
Can you get meaner, John? I guess you could be me.
But yeah, he's back behind the plate. He's doing well. I think it's a combination of having him, but the thing that clued into me is when I talked to Dennis Sarfate and had this chat, and he talked about the importance of Toru Hosokawa as the catcher. And where is Hosokawa this year?
He's the backup at Rockdale.
But he's there. He's on the roster.
Yeah, of course. He had an inauspicious debut because as soon as Shima got conked on the head, he came in and there was a disaster ensued because he was working with a pitcher I don't think he'd ever worked with. And the game fell apart. But yeah, he is with Rockton. I'm not going to give him credit for that yet.
He's there, but I mean, he can add to a pitching staff. He can say, don't you try this as a catcher? Why don't you try calling the game this way?
But I'll tell you this about Hosokawa. He's a good catcher for certain pitchers. He's a perfect catcher for somebody who wants to be challenged and who's competitive in that, who's competitive with his battery mate to be better. But I think for a lot of Japanese pitchers and teams, I know he really wore out his welcome to some degree with most of the people in SoftBank.
Well, yeah, that can happen, but
the fact is that he doesn't hit is part of it, but he's a tough guy. I know everybody, a lot of his teammates, on the other hand, a lot of his teammates do love him. Everybody respects him. I think, but that edge that he has, an edge that wears on people.
Okay.
So,
well, whatever is wearing on people or teammates, or it's working. Maybe it's not. I don't want to credit him, but things are working well in Rakuten Land at the moment, and that's without supposed ace Takahiro Norimoto, the guy I call Nori Nori because he has been more of a minus than a plus. Yuki Matsui has been calmer as the closer, fewer walks, fewer hits, fewer hair-raising ninth innings or whatever inning he comes in. Frank Herman has been an asset, import pitcher. Kohei Morihara has been good, and he's been decent. That gives them that has been an issue in the past. The starter comes out in the fifth inning. There's been a mess made in the sixth and seventh and eighth, even if in a game they're leading or a game they're trailing by just a little bit, and then they're out of the game by the
they have
inning.
Been. I mean, this is really the Nishida pattern is, fix. He's really a problem solver.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, he said, these are the guys I got to work with. And his first year solutions never seemed to work, but they always seem, as I've said before, he's won three, he's managed, this is his third team. And if the Eagles don't win the pennant, it'll be the first time he didn't win the Pacific League pennant his second year.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you to bring that up. I'm glad you
did
that.
Yeah, he identifies that he has in the past identified people, and I look at the starts and I think, you know, some really better approaches by these pitchers, by the starting pitchers. You know, it doesn't seem like the Eagles are out there just like, you know, go out there and show us what you can do. It's like the coaching staff is really involved in this process more than they have been in the last couple of years. So,
right. And I tell you why it's such an impressive start for me. It's guys like Wataru Karashima, Yoshinao Kamata, Manabu Mima.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally got a start from Takayuki Kishi, the newcomer from Cebu. And he did well, obviously, in his first game, pitched really well. And
well, he always pitches well in Chiba, where he threw his, you know, his no-hitter. He tends to pitch well in Chiba, but yes. Yeah.
So if they can get Norimoto on board and get him going, I can see them really competing for a long time. But they're going to have to do it for a long time to impress me, get me
on board. I think, you know, but I've seen some good things from them. I mean, I've seen little things like the base running, has, as I mentioned last week, has been really good. I know Genji Akaminai has been just, has probably the best example of a guy who doesn't really have much speed, but he has been a really good base runner so far this season.
Right.
And a couple of things like... I think it was Kazuya Fujita scored on a wild pitch that bounced about 5 feet from the plate because he was ready to go.
Right, right.
Little things like that. And the other thing is, of course, that trio in the lineup that is just killing everybody with Motoshima batting ninth and Mogi batting first and Peguero third. Those three are just annihilating teams. And so eventually that's going to stop. You know, one of those guys is going to, you know, the law of averages is going to catch up with their balls, with their the balls in play, and they're going to be start Agreed. Hitting them to people.
But that gives them an opportunity to see Zealous Wheeler and Amador start to produce.
You know, well, ostensibly, one hopes, and I think they will. They obviously saw enough in, I trust Nashida's judgment, he saw enough in Amador last year to keep him on.
Right.
The base running stuff has not caught up with him yet.
Yeah, realize you are not a Porsche. You are a Volkswagen bug at best.
Wow. Squash him.
Don't try to score. Don't run the team out. You know, Dave Okubo is not the manager anymore. Don't try to collect extra bases for no reason. Yeah.
don't collect Dave Brownie points.
Right. And the other team that I've been impressed by in the opening here first weeks, we've gone through one rotation where we played all the other teams in the league, and now you're starting with that second. This weekend was the second rotation, so to speak, of playing opponents in the league. And Oryx, the Buffaloes, are doing well, and I'm happy for them. I like I said in the preview or the prediction show, they cleaned office, and that's step one. And while I don't see a lot of difference between what Junichi Fukuda, the manager, has been doing, I still think that he is just, like you said, he's popular with the players and he's letting them shine. I don't think he's doing too much. He's not doing too little. He's just more like a cheerleader. But in my opinion, from a distance.
No, well, I wouldn't, you know, I was on the same, thinking along the same lines that, you know, they cleaned house at the top of the organization. And I thought, well, that's fine, but everything else is still in place. But here's the thing, which I've been harping on for years, which is very hard for you to succeed consistently. It's very hard for players to put their bodies on the line, to push themselves to succeed. To push themselves beyond what they think is possible for a team in which the teams is led by people who are only in it for themselves and have no interest in the team winning other than how much more money they can skim off the top.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm still amazed that the Lotte Marines were able to win in 2010 with Ryuzo Setoyama in charge of that team.
Mm-hmm.
But I think some of that was, Bobby's gone, and every, when your manager changes, sometimes, things happen, good things happen. A lot of things were going on there, but they soon, fired Setoyama, as he was fired by Daiei before. And, but I think, that influence, I think it could well be that the players, everybody knew it. The foreign scouts knew it. I mean, they were going like, this organization is, everybody who spends, who walks in, who walked into the Oryx Buffalo's office by accident could feel the bad karma around that organization. I mean, yeah. I'm not talking guys that were there like for a week. It's, what's up with the Buffaloes,
Yeah.
And
what's happening here? What's wrong with this picture?
But obviously, when that changes and players are thinking, oh, geez, now we have people who actually care about the team running it and care about wins and losses running it, well, okay.
Makes a difference, yeah.
Yeah, so I do see a little bit of that. I've seen better play and weird things, things. I think, I made fun of them playing Hikaru Ito at third and first, but he is, he catches when he needs to catch, and the other guy has become a better catcher, and Ito's hasn't been a complete zero. I guess it's more of a flexibility thing. He's still catching, but he can do other things as well. So maybe that's not a crazy negative thing, but just a let's look and see what we can do. So
yeah, give them credit for
what they've done so far.
Yeah, Kenya Wakatsuki's the other catcher. I looked at the pitching early on. The pitching leaders in the top three are number one Yuki Nishi,
mm-hmm.
number two Chihiro Kaneko. This is in the Pacific League, the rankings right at the moment, and then mm-hmm. Takahiro Matsuba. The top three are Buffalo's pitchers, and it's not like they finished last year. They didn't bring in that much to help. They brought in Phil Koch. They brought in Stefan Romero.
Mm.
But it's
who's hit very well.
Who has been banging, yeah. It's basically the same guys. And, of course, if you get a home run here and there from a foreign guy in a run-producing spot in the lineup, it's going to help your team, obviously. But I wouldn't say he has been. I would say it's been the same guys who have been there before who are now producing.
But Hiroyuki Nakajima is fit and playing well, and Koyama is fit and playing well, the shortstop Adachi is healthy from the start of the season. He has a chronic illness. Takahiro Okada has been hitting. They've been getting good play from whoever they've got in center field. So it's been fun to watch. I'm really happy for them.
I am too. I always want to root for the Buffaloes, but it just is.
Well, let's not.
Whenever
go
I've
too
had
far.
Expectations for them, what's that?
Let's not go too far. But I hear you. Because you like the players and you want them to do well.
Exactly, and obviously, it looks like if that team wins, that there's a loyal fan base there in the Kansai region that will support them. But I'm still not sold. I want to see more from some of the other guys. I want to see more production from Phil Koch. He's obviously added some depth to that rotation, but I'm not going to take this team seriously until we get to June, maybe even July, and they're still up there. One more guy I left out in terms of the rotation who has been there for a while, and he's number six. I told you, I gave you the top three ranked pitchers in the Pacific League at the moment, and number six is Brandon Dixon.
Yep.
It's not like he's doing poorly either. So
no, he had a knockout start the other day. So
yes,
yeah.
He did. So the only question weakness I'm looking at right now that I see that could cost them games over the long run is the bullpen.
Yep.
And especially Yoshihisa Hirano at the back. I don't think he's the final answer, but he gets the job done for the most part, more often than not. So I think he's going to stay in the role. But
Right. He's
that looks like a weakness.
Well, yeah, he's got one foot is on the Hitoki Iwase spot, and the other one's on the Hirokazu Sawamura spot. And sort of which way his foot's going to be. Some days he comes out and he's lights out. Which is not Iwase, but I mean somebody of quality, of consistent, and somebody who's very inconsistent. You just don't know what you're going to get with him. Nothing good yesterday, but three run saves are a blessing.
Right. Okay, I want to shift over and make a four-seam transition and talk about the Central League. And obviously the Hiroshima Carp had a 10-game winning streak, had it snapped on Friday, came back on Saturday by winning, going away, beating the Tigers. So 10 consecutive wins, that is a really good way to start out the season, obviously.
Yeah, well, they'll take it. And what is it with the Tigers? The Tigers are the only team that can beat them so far.
Yeah. Now, we didn't talk about it last week because he didn't get it, but Takuya Kato, the rookie pitcher for the Carp, had a no-hitter into the ninth inning, and Vladimir Coco Ballantyne broke it up with a single. And that was on April 7th. And so he just missed it. But I remember watching Kato in the warm-ups before the game started. And he threw a warm-up toss like way over the catcher's head, one of them, and I'm thinking, oh, this guy, first start, you know, his debut, this is going to be ugly, because he couldn't control that fastball in the warm-up.
Well, from the Swallows' perspective, it was ugly.
Yeah, and it did turn out to be ugly for the Swallows, and they ended up, he didn't get the shutout or anything, but he won the game, obviously. But it's good there. You notice anything different about Takahiro Arai, and that they named him the MVP, and now he actually believes
it? Yeah, he's like going, you know what they often say in the majors is he's playing, he wants to prove that it's not a fluke. Okay, no. He wants to prove that he can actually earn one.
Hashtag high.
You know, yeah, he's playing like he wants to earn one as opposed to get one.
Yeah, the thing I've noticed about him, though, is, and he started it seemed, last year, maybe in the second half of the season last year. He might have been doing it early on. Maybe some of the Carp fans can let me know. But his bat toss, I wouldn't even say it's a flip. He hits the ball, and then he throws the bat like he meant to do both.
That's right. Yeah, it's like a sort of a Japanese baseball version of the Kyber throw.
Yeah, yeah.
He gives that thing a heave.
He says, so whatever it is, he's starting to believe it. The team is playing well. They're getting the pitching that I didn't think, the reason I didn't expect them, or I didn't predict that they would repeat in the Central League. And I'm obviously, I picked the Giants and they're doing okay, but the Carp really look like the class of the league if they're going to get this kind of pitching throughout the rotation. I mean, that Kato was supposed to be their last, their last pitcher, and he comes out in almost no hits, and he probably pitched well enough to win in his second start, but they didn't score, and they didn't play great defense, and they didn't win the game.
Right. So well, those are the but you see, that's the whole Carp experience is, if they don't score, they're going to score, and they're going to play defense. So if they get 80% of the pitching they're getting now, they're going to win.
Right.
I think those are the things, you know, that's really the question mark. And we have Alan Curry now, who is basically, he's one complete game away from his record, his career record of throwing three in a row. He's one quality start away from his record of 3-3 starts. And then he basically stopped starting him after that. You know, then he ran into trouble, and that was the end of his starting career as a rookie.
Yeah.
So he's looked good. I mean, basically, it's always been a question of him of sticking with what works and not. Basically, he's a sinker, slider, splitter guy, and he got his four seam fastball is really useful when he's got people looking low in the zone, and he'll get some strikeouts and pop ups with that thing because nobody sees it coming. And then he goes, oh, yeah, strikeout guy. That's me, strikeout guy. I was a strikeout guy in college.
Right, right.
And then the next day, it's 5 runs in 2 innings.
Right. Akitake Okada, he's the guy on Saturday who went the distance against the Tigers and held them to a run. He's got 2 wins. So they're making up these innings. Who else? So Kato did well. Kurdi has done well.
Yep. That was really what's needed. Of course, what's needed is for them to keep getting most of those inning, you know, quality innings over the next 5 months.
Right.
And they don't have to be, you know, and they don't have to be as I said, they don't have to be as good as they are, because this is a team that's going to score runs. So, and the other thing the Carp are doing, and like the Eagles, is they're running the bases really, really well, which is part of the Carp experience as well, is good base running. And I don't mean base stealing, but I just mean pushing their opponents to the edge on every single play.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't, but, you know, it keeps the opponents from getting complacent, keeps them from getting into a groove, you know, it upsets their timing a little bit.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, they certainly look so far, no major injuries so far, other than influenza and such.
Right. And then the Tigers, they're doing a great job of collecting quality wins. I didn't expect Shintaro Fujinami to be bad, even though for some reason in the WBC he just wasn't effective, couldn't get on the mound for the team. He pitched really well on Thursday night to beat the DeNA Bay Stars. They're obviously going to be better if he is productive and effective on the mound. Randy Messenger, we've seen what he has done throughout his career here in Japan.
Yeah, he's been very consistent, to be honest.
Yeah, really consistent, especially I can't say especially anything. He's been Randy Messenger.
Yeah, he's been indeed.
And they're better than I thought, I have to admit, even with the iffy defense. And I've seen some poor play on the defensive side for them, but they're still winning games. They're hitting around it, or they're pitching around it, or they're just playing around it. And they look like they can be a playoff team, but I'm just not sure if they can sustain this. That's all I ever said, even in the prediction show. I just said, you know, over the course of a season, my man, Yoshio Itoi, that swing, that power, all that stuff excites me, but what's he going to do on the defensive side? And we've already seen in center, it's not championship-level defense he's playing in center field. In fact, there was a play on Saturday that I bet, maybe if it was 10 years ago, I think he would have at least been in position to try to make a better effort to catch the ball. It was a tough one. I think it was a long fly ball to center, and it went off the fence, but I think he was tentative going back, and he just didn't get into position to make a catch. Mm. And there have been other plays. He came in on a ball one time when they were at Kyocera Dome. I don't remember what game it was, but he came in and looked like he was going to make the catch, and the ball drops. He's just not a center fielder, and the pitchers are going to have to work around the defense on this team. And in the long run, that's why I would say that it's going to cost them a pennant, but they look like they can be a higher place team than the pick that I made, which was in the fifth place or fourth place, probably fifth place range.
Well, I'm not gonna say anything about it. As I said, it's too early.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, but they're doing well. I do want to acknowledge that the Tigers are playing well, and
sure,
it's fun.
Sure, sure.
It's good to see. I mean, I you know, I'm a Itoi fan, so I'm going to be rooting for him.
And, yeah, I heard that somewhere. Yeah.
And Fukudome started with the Dragons. I remember even he was one of my first Japanese interviews, so
he's really aged well. Of course, he's aged really well the last 3 years. I mean, he's played, you know, he came back from the majors and he had 2 years when, and then the last three, it's like he went back to the late, you know, to the last decade. You know, it's like he never, you know, it was like right after, you know, 2007, he was hurt and then he left, and then and it's almost like 2008 and he came back. He's like, it's almost like he's 9 years younger.
Yeah. Yeah. He's looking good. He's aging
well.
Yeah. So
good for him. Yeah. It's really fun. So.
And then there's the story of the Chunichi Dragons and Shigekazu Mori, the new skipper. I understand what's happening in Chunichi land.
Oh, do you?
Based on a conversation I had with Mori a few years back about a Dragons pitcher who was doing well at the time. And I don't even remember who the pitcher was, but I went to talk to him. I said, this guy's doing really well. He says, yeah, well, the only problem I see with him is he doesn't realize the game is 9 innings long. And it came back to me the other day because I think I was complaining. I don't even know that I was tweeting it out, but I was complaining, why is he leaving these pitchers out so long in the games? I think he understands, as a pitcher, a former pitcher himself, he understands the concept of saving the bullpen, saving the lesser pitchers. The fewer times those guys are on the mound, the better your chances are of winning. There, okay. Some of these guys are relievers for a reason. And he, other than starting Raul Valdez every other day, it seems like.
Yeah, letting him hit, maybe batting him leadoff.
Yeah.
Get that 500 average up there, dude.
Yeah, get it up in the lineup. Maybe that's why he's pitching him so much. He wants to get the bat in the lineup. leaving guys out in the seventh inning, I think he did it with Kazuki Yoshimi.
Although he pitched well. I mean, that's...
He pitched well, but it seemed to me that he was done. And I just think he wants his young pitchers to realize, hey, the game's nine innings long. Don't think you're going to be able to run and hide to the bench just because you get into trouble in the seventh inning. That's not how it's going to work around here. I don't know.
If that's something that, sometimes early in the season when you see teams playing, you're getting mixed results.
Right.
And it's sometimes part of the process.
Right. I was going to say, you have mixed results because you have mixed plans. This team is obviously rebuilding.
I'm saying that if the plan is to, these guys is pushing the guy from perhaps saying, I want, the bit, we made, I in particular made fun of Tomoki Kanemoto last year teaching Fujinami a lesson about control by having him throw 180 some odd pitches. But there is a point to be made of having people in, keep letting closers get out of their, or starters get out of their own, get used to getting out of trouble. Or giving them opportunities to learn how to get out of trouble, to develop. And sometimes, manager's job is to push players to do as well as they can.
Right.
It could be this could be, I don't know, but this could be certainly a byproduct of his of that learning process that, this is what we're going to do this year. And it could be that come June and July, the guys will say, okay, this is what I have this plan C just in case.
Right.
They may be developing that. And in which case, things could look better.
Yeah, that was what I started to think is, okay, well, there's a plan in place. This is how they're going to develop the young pitchers, and they can't develop the young pitchers if the older pitchers aren't doing it too, so they're just going to leave everybody out there. And, they want these guys to lead by example. I don't know. We don't know the plan, obviously. Mm-hmm. I always talk about we're not privy to the plan. We only get the results. Mm-hmm. And we think we know how to manage these teams better than the guys doing it. So I'm not
going to assume that. No. We. Don't be talking for you, me, man.
Not you, huh?
No.
But,
that's you and others, but not me.
Okay, I try not to do that. I try to observe and then try to think. And like I said, this is that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have remembered talking to Mori about this if I wasn't trying to figure out what the plan was. I'm not just looking at the results, and I know they're losing, and they look bad doing it, and they struggle. Every game is a struggle. They hardly score more than they usually score about two runs. They hardly score more than three. I think it's only happened twice so far this season. They've gone 13 games as of today, and a starting pitcher still doesn't have a win. So they're rebuilding. It's a process for them, and they're in the middle of the process. So I'm not going to try to figure things out, but I still think they need to make some changes. I don't like what I've seen from either of the import batters. They're not producing the way they should be, in my opinion. But anyway, that's just my opinion. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, so we got a question this week from @StuartMiller, and he asks, and we've had this question on before, but I think it's not bad because things change, so we've got to update.
Okay.
So the question is, what is the best NPB stadium in terms of concessions? And I'll go first. Like I said, we've had a similar question, but to me, and Jim knows this better than most people, I'm not the one to ask about food. I don't attend games as a fan. We always go in, and there's a cafeteria.
So John Gibson rates the cafeterias?
No, let me finish, man. There's a cafeteria, so it's always safe. There's always something bland, like some kind of pasta dish or some curry dish that I can eat and get out alive and not have to worry. No. So I don't usually get involved with concessions. I don't even know how to explain this. I make the word finicky seem very appealing to some people. Okay.
Yeah. The last time John came out and said, "I'm a finicky eater," he almost got sued by the Finicky Eaters Association for making him look bad.
Right. Yeah. You're so much worse than we are.
Way down. We've got our self-respect.
We've got our self-respect to maintain here. We don't need the likes of you, your kind. Yeah. There's no word to describe my relationship with food.
No.
And compile that with the fact that I'm trying to eat healthy. Mm-hmm. So half of the things on the menu, I wouldn't even consider food. And the other things on the menu, I probably don't want to eat because they're not healthy. I'm trying to avoid them. So I don't eat much of anything. With that being said, John, the last time I went to what's now being called Zozo Marine Stadium, there are a lot of food trucks and booths outside of that stadium, and they just look delicious. And one of the bloggers, I believe it's Steve, he has taken some pictures of some of those items, and they look really good. So I would say if you're going to go somewhere, you have a ticket, you have the opportunity to go to an NPB game, I think Zozo Marine Stadium is probably worth the trip because the quality of the fan support, the baseball, and the food probably can't be beaten. And it also has caramel popcorn, and that's great anywhere, and I like that stuff. But I'm trying to cut back, as I said.
Yeah, so. The caramel popcorn, I think they need to cut down on that at Yokohama, because when I'm on the field before the game, and Jingu too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you're on the field trying to talk to players, and you're getting... Sweet emotions. I'm going, man, let me get out of here. I want to get some ball. And I don't, but because as John said, it's not good for me, so I don't. But I will make a couple of comments. First, where's Wayne Grassick when you need him? Because he's a guy who lives for ballpark concessions, it seems. At least that's one of his passions.
Yes.
Ranking the best pizzas and donuts around the NPB's parks.
Right.
Rock 10, Kobo Park or Stadium, if you want to go by what's on the scoreboard, has some really attractive looking things. They like Chiba, they have all the food concessions outside, inside, all over the place. So that's really welcoming and beckoning. Say Chiba, I can't further that enough. Everything looks really, really good. I don't eat it all, but it all does really look good. And unlike John, I bring my bento to the ballpark 90% of the time. So I rarely eat any of these things, but they do look good. Another place that really looks good is Mazda Stadium. They don't have that all outside, but inside is spectacular.
Right, I remember you saying that last time we had the question. Yeah.
Right. Another one is Jingu. His stuff inside Jingu looks pretty good. I can't pass, before the game, I can't pass the Jack Daniel's Rib Shack there without wanting a burrito or some kind of barbecue. I'm fighting the good fight.
Okay.
So those are the places I would recommend. So.
And then for me, the place that puts the least effort into the fan food experience at the ballpark is Tokyo Dome.
I would think Fukuoka is probably... I think Fukuoka Dome is a rival for that.
Okay.
I haven't been to Kyocera Dome in a long time, and I haven't sat in the stands there forever. I'm always just on the field before the game. And Nagoya Dome looks pretty tepid as well.
Right. Yeah. Having not been at some of these domes in a long time, those are my observations here. I think this question was brought on. I'm not sure. You can let us know, Stuart, by the fact that Safeco Field in Seattle this year has what it calls toasted grasshoppers.
Yeah.
And these zesty flavored grasshoppers probably sparked this question, because I don't want to go to, I don't even want to be in the ballpark with these
insects.
Insects is what you want to call it. It's not food, but I suppose places have offered a lot worse. I wonder what they offer in the concessions in China. Thank you very much, Stuart, for the question. Anyone else who has a question, send it to at JBW Podcast on Twitter with the high heat hashtag. Mm-hmm. Send us questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and you can check us out on the Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Look for us on iTunes. We will talk to you next week.
We will, even though it'll still be too early to talk about the standings.
All right. Enjoy your baseball.
Ciao.